Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to the Monday edition of Catholic Answers Live. Happy to have you here with us. Thanks for being here with us. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our number, 888-31-TRUTH. And this hour we tackle, what if the Catholic Church is right about sex? What? What would the world be like if people would accept that? What if people came to understand we were meant for chastity and fidelity and self-giving and all of those good qualities? Ask yourself this, what about the institutions of our society? Are they, by rejecting this, the Christian sexual ethic proposed by the church, are they actually destroying lives? Actually, that's just what our guest argues in a brand new book called The Sexual State, how elite ideologies are destroying lives and why the Catholic Church was right all along. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is the author. Dr. Morse, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's a blast to be back on.
It's very good to have you. I think I hate to bring up bad memories, but I think the last time you were guilty of some kind of hate crime or something, last time we spoke, do you remember the thing?
I'm still on the hate list.
Are you still on the hate list?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. My question is, why aren't you on the hate list? You guys need to up your game.
I know. I feel like we're failing because what we're referring to is the Southern Poverty Law Center. Scam. Oh, excuse me. The Southern Poverty. Did the word scam come out of my mouth?
I think that was you.
Has put Dr. Morse and her institute, the Ruth Institute, on that campaign on their kind of bad, naughty list. And that has to do with you standing up for traditional marriage. You were one of the spokespeople for the Proposition 8, which was a successful ballot initiative here in California to maintain the definition of marriage as being a union between a man and a woman. But all that is in the past now. Now you just have to bake the cake or whatever. Well, actually, maybe you don't have to bake the cake. We find out. But you're still on that list. You're still on the bad list, huh?
That's it. You know, no one knows how you get on the list or how you get off the list. Yeah. So I just kind of wear it as a badge of honor. And, you know, sometimes people say, gee, you're not nearly mean enough to be on this list. And
I know you can hearken back to a day when the Southern Poverty Law Center was challenging the Ku Klux Klan in court and doing all that. And
right.
I think they're living off the fumes of that once noble effort.
I think that's right. So I'm on the anti-LGBT portion of the list because I don't go along with all of the assumptions of the radicals. So.
Yeah. Well, okay. So the sexual revolution is a contested revolution. And I think that a lot of people in society would like to say, a lot of institutions in our society would like to say, this is not a contested revolution. If you're on one side of it, you're on the right side. And if you're on the other side, you're on the, I don't know, creepy, old, dying, last gasp of the wrong side. And that's what this book is about, and to a large extent, the sexual state. The thing is, though, what struck me about the book is more and more, I do think people are coming. There are authors out there coming to tell the truth about the sexual revolution. And you've been doing it yourself for a long time. You were the first person I remember publicly using the phrase victims of the sexual revolution, which
right.
I think is a really important phrase. But in this book, you argue that that the sexual revolution is rooted in dishonesty about the human person. And for that reason, it needs the state to kind of propagate it. That's exactly right.
You know, in a sense, that insight that comes pretty early in the book is the key to the whole thing. And I think it's the key to understanding the whole course of the sexual revolution side, because
right.
I've been giving these talks in front of live audiences for, you know, several years now. And you can look out in the audience and you can see people nodding their head, or you can see them scratching their head or whatever, you know. And I'm pretty sure people get this point, right?
Yeah.
That if you're trying to build a society around things that are untrue, you won't be able to succeed. It's impossible, right? But if you're trying to do the impossible, that doesn't necessarily talk them out of trying. They continue to try, but they just need more power. to make it work, and they need a lot of propaganda to make it seem plausible. So in the book, I lay out what I think are the key ideas of the sexual revolution, point out that they're all false, impossible, can't be done. And I think in the past, Cy, a lot of times, I mean, I used to feel this way. And it was really when we lost the court cases on the marriage issue that I finally started asking myself, well, how can it be that we keep pointing out that this is irrational and that it can't work and that it has all these problems? Why isn't that good enough to win? You know, why are we still arguing about this? And it turns out that doesn't really dissuade the true believer. See, the true believer is committed to the fantasy ideology, just like the communist is committed to the idea of a prosperous society with no property. You know, where everybody owns everything in common and it's all wonderful.
Right.
And if we just keep trying a little harder, it'll all be fine, you know. And of course, you end up with Venezuela. You know, you don't end up with more prosperity or more equality. You just end up with a mess.
Right.
And I think something comparable is happening with the sexual revolution. People think it's a high moral duty to implement these principles, but it can't be done. And so since it can't be done, they just need more and more power. Uh-huh. And more kind of crazy propaganda.
Yeah.
And you still keep moving further and further away from anything like human flourishing or happiness.
It strikes me that another insight here in the book, and that I've heard you speak about as well, and tell me if I get this wrong, but that in order to continue this idealizing of the sexual revolution, this idea that, oh, it's a glorious thing and it's a good thing and it's a— you really have to suppress any knowledge of the victims. You just have to not tell those stories.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. When you start to see that, then you see that maybe that's a key to overcoming it somehow. So in the first part of the book, I spend actually the first chapter just talking about different people who have been harmed in some way by the sexual revolution, whether it's children of divorce, whether it's abandoned spouses, whether it's people who were harmed by their abortions or their contraceptive use. There are whole lots of different people who've been harmed, but you never see them in public, right? You never see their stories. You know, it's always just this glorious march towards more freedom and more fun and more liberation. And so it's very important that you not talk about women who regret their abortions. Right. And I think when the pro-life movement started thinking about those women, it changed a lot of the discussion. It shifted the discussion around, didn't it? You know, when those ladies start showing up with those signs saying, I regret my abortion. This is a woman 60 years old. I mean, I remember the San Diego Walk for Life. I still have a photo of that older lady. She comes every year, I guess, you know. And she was in her 60s. She's just sitting there with that sign saying, I regret my abortion. It's heartbreaking.
Right.
It's heartbreaking. But you won't see her with her own comedy show on Netflix or something, you know.
Yes.
You only see the cheerleaders.
Right. Literally and so a cheerleader on Netflix. I think you're talking about that comedian, Michelle something, whose name I forget. But
yes,
dressing
yes,
up as a right. drum majorette cheerleader for abortion.
I know. But that's all the mainstream media can allow. Right. Once you decide you're going down that path, you've got to suppress the voices of the victims. You can't say, well, gee, maybe abortion was a mistake or maybe sex actually does make babies and we should kind of plan on that rather than suppressing that. You know, maybe it'd be a good society if you planned around that fact. Nope, can't have that. That's too easy.
888-318-7884 is our number. 888-318-7884. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse has for many years been one of the premier voices for sanity in regard to confronting the sexual revolution. She has a brand new book, The Sexual State: How Elite Ideologies Are Destroying Lives and Why the Catholic Church Was Right All Along. And you say there are three parts to the sexual this I had not seen before, or I had not heard you say it. But so could you just review for me before we have to take a break and then we'll come back and take some calls? The three kind of are they stages or ideologies, core thoughts that go with the sexual revolution?
I think of them as three interlocking ideologies because they mutually support each other, but they are different. I mean, each one could run on its own a little bit, but I start with the contraceptive ideology. And that's the idea that a good and decent society should do everything possible to separate sex from babies. Right? Do you recognize that as our world, right?
Yeah.
A good society should separate sex from babies. That's the contraceptive ideology. Second point, a good society should separate sex and babies from marriage. So there's no special requirement that you be married before you have either sex or have a baby. And I call that the divorce ideology, because that's really saying that kids don't actually need their parents. The kids are so resilient, they'll be fine. Don't worry about it, right? And then the final ideology is what I call the gender ideology. And that is the idea that the human body is somehow insignificant. And so in its early form, it was men and women are completely interchangeable. Men and women are identical, except women are better. See, that was the old form of feminism, right?
Yes.
But now it's to the point where men and women, well, maybe they're different, but, you know, your body is not so important that you can't reconstruct your body so that you can become whatever gender you want to be. That's how the gender ideology has morphed. But it is a variant of the original idea, which is that your body is not particularly significant, right? And so that's what I call the gender ideology. And the push towards redefining marriage, a genderless version of marriage, the promotion of homosexual activity and homosexual marriage as a thing, you know, those are outgrowths of the gender ideology that are claiming that the body's not very significant.
888-318-7884, our number, Dr. Jennifer Robach-Morse, our guest, and we're talking about the sexual state, how the state gets involved in all of these sexual revolution issues, because they will not stand on their own. It's striking to think about how the gay marriage agenda was on ballots in different places, and it wasn't doing all that well as far as in some places the legislatures were going over to it. In some places, populations were voting for it. But for example, in California, where you would think such a thing would be a slam dunk, at least that's what they would tell you, is that it should be a slam dunk here. It was rejected. And it was, in fact, the raw power of judges that made this thing happen. It was a raw exercise of power. This was not a democratic undertaking.
No. And it also wasn't something that just kind of emerged from the grassroots in some kind of organic cultural manner that has no particular origin, no particular cause. You know, it's just kind of a force of nature, like the hurricane blowing in from the Gulf. You know, it just happened. Nobody's responsible for it. That's not true. And I think you can plainly see that with the whole issue around the normalization of same-sex sexual practice, the redefinition of marriage, all of those things. That didn't come from the grassroots. That has been created, very carefully created, by people with a lot of money and a lot of power.
All lines are filling up, and I have to run for a quick sec. We'll be right back to take your calls for Dr. Jennifer Robach-Morse. Before we go, remember that Made This Way, the brand new book from Layla Miller and Trent Horn, is coming out. You can pre-order now by going to shop.catholic.com. This is a book that takes a parental approach and helps you talk about the hardest moral issues of our day, many having to do with the sexual revolution, with children and teens. And not just here's some advice for you, but actually helps you get into those conversations that need to be had within families. It's called Made This Way, and you can pre-order it now at shop.catholic.com.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
Our mission is to transform the world one woman at a time through a spiritual program of formation that helps them to see who they are as daughters of the Most High God and to enjoy the gift that God has given to them by virtue of their femininity.
Women of Grace with Jeanette Bankovic Williams. Tomorrow morning, 11 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. We're discussing The Sexual State, brand new book from Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, how elite ideologies are destroying lives and why the church was right all along. I like any subtitle that ends with "the church was right all along." I appreciate that. We have a bunch of callers on, however. Dr. Morse, shall we take a few calls?
I'm happy to do that.
All right. John in Bloomington, Illinois, listening on AM 1060. You are on with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. John, your question?
Good evening, ma'am. I have a question regarding the Catholics' position on modesty. I believe that this is an issue because it's very clear that impurity is flooding our streets. You can't go anywhere. You can't go to a store. You can't open a magazine or a newspaper. You can't watch anything on television without impurity flooding the eyes and being an influence on our teenage daughters. Does the Catholic Church still have the position where they approve a Mary-like standard of fashion for dress?
Well, I think officially the Catholic Church's position on modesty has never changed. You know, the church has always had the position that people should dress modestly and not make themselves into an occasion of sin for others and to themselves. So I think officially there's never been a change in that position. I think, in fact, the church has kind of hasn't done much about it recently. Let's put it that way. You know, the church is the church, let's be honest, the church has been AWOL on a lot of these issues. You know, I mean, not that the doctrine has officially changed, but there just aren't as many people speaking about it the way they should be and could be. And I think that's been a big loss to the culture because it means that the forces that you're talking about, John, kind of have a free rein. You know, they just kind of go careening through society and there's nobody to put on the brakes at all. So that's been a loss.
John, I hope that was helpful for you. We have lots of calls for Dr. Morse, so I am going to keep going. Michael in St. Louis, Missouri, listening on 1460 AM. You are up with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. Your question, please.
Great, thanks. One of the things you always hear back when you talk about redefining marriage is people will say, well, it's not hurting anybody, so what's your problem with it? What do you think the best response to that is to show that it is hurting people and how they're hurt?
Well, you know, honestly, people say that about every part of the sexual revolution. You know, it's not really hurting anybody. It's not hurting you. So why should you care what somebody else is doing? So, for example, people kind of said, well, how does my divorce affect your marriage? Children will be fine. It's not that big of a deal. The kids are fine after divorce. They get over it. They move on. And, you know, your marriage is fine and solid. How could my divorce possibly affect you? Well, that's what people said back in the day. And of course, now when we look around us, we can see that it actually does matter quite a bit. You know, that the understanding of human community that says, I'm not hurting you because my divorce is just happening here in my house and it doesn't have any spillover effects. That's a very naive view of how a social order works. I mean, and I'll just give you one example on that particular issue, Michael. I was talking to a friend of mine who's about my age, and she was talking about how when she was a teenager, her parents were professors at a university. I forget what university it was. And they decided to experiment with open marriage, see, back in the 60s and the 70s. Her parents decided to do this experiment. And she, you know, my friend and her brothers and sisters are like, what the heck's going on? So her parents are having an open marriage. One of her parents, they get divorced, and one of them marries another friend, you know, another professor. And so that marriage breaks up, and then that spare spouse goes and has an affair with yet another spouse in the same circle of friends. And so what ended up happening is that whole little community, everybody ended up divorced. You know, and so when you say that marriage is structurally going to be an impermanent institution, you kind of turn people, you turn everybody loose, right? And so it does have spillover effects. And honestly, that's what I do in a lot of the sexual state, a lot of this book, Michael. I spend a lot of the time in here really showing the different ways that my sexual activity does turn out to affect other people. And the structures and the rules that we have around things do, those structures and rules do affect other people. So that's the general point. And then the gay marriage issue is one instance of that more general point, which is that when you create a society where you say children don't really have a right to their parents, you've said something quite profound, you know, that some children have a right, have a legally recognized right to know both of their parents, and other children don't. That's quite a profound thing to say, and it does affect everybody. So that's the way I would go with it, and I would not be afraid, Michael, when you're talking to people about these issues, do not be afraid to bring up the other topics where we have many more years of experience and can say for sure the church is right, right? It may be a little soon to say, you know, what is gay marriage going to do to all of society? But it's not too soon to say that divorce has been a mess. You know, it's not too soon to say that. We have plenty of evidence on that point.
How's that strike you, Michael?
That's great. Great. Thanks for the information. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you so much. Something that as you go through these three, kind of the contraceptive ideology, the divorce ideology, and then the gender ideology, all connected into this one overarching thing we can call the sexual revolution.
Right.
In what way would you say, because you say the state is used as an instrument of power to kind of promote these, because reason won't do it. You can't reason your way to think, hey, a society where most marriages fail, that's the kind of society we want. You're never going to reason your way to that. That makes no sense. So how does government actually encourage or promote the divorce ideology?
Well, divorce is actually the most obvious one to see, because the underlying idea, and it's important to see the underlying idea, the thing people are trying to get to when they create these ideologies. I mean, I think the fantasy that people have is the kids are so resilient that it doesn't matter what we do as adults. We can partner and repartner and pair up and, you know, break up and reconfigure our relationships, and the kids will be fine because they're so resilient. Now, we adults, we're so fragile. We have to have our love lives exactly the way we want them or we'll go to pieces. But the kids are going to be fine. You know, it's all good. That's the underlying fantasy, right?
Yes.
That is trying to be achieved. And so the way the government has promoted the divorce ideology is really very simple, Cy. What no-fault divorce says, no-fault divorce is actually a misnomer, I would say. The what it really should be called is unilateral divorce, because what no-fault divorce says is that one party can end the marriage for any reason or no reason, and the government will always take sides with the person who wants the marriage the least. See, that's the point people don't get. The government always takes sides with a person who doesn't want to stay married. That's not neutral. That's a big thing. That's a big thumb on the scale of pushing people towards impermanence and towards non-sexual exclusivity. So that's the other thing that no-fault divorce does, Cy, is it's not just that marriage is not permanent anymore. Marriage is also not sexually exclusive. Because adultery used to be like the number one fault, right? That's a marital fault. You're in trouble. You can't do that. Well, now, heck, you can do that. The adulterer gets whatever they want.
Because what used to carry consequences with it now no longer carries consequences.
Exactly.
Before a judge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And sadly, I'm going to say this and probably get in a lot of trouble, but I don't care. Sadly, Catholic divorce is not that different from civil divorce. You know, that so many people look at the annulment process as if it is simply Catholic divorce, and they anticipate sometimes. I mean, I hear these stories all the time. So, you know, when you put yourself out there in the public, like I put myself out there, people tell me things, you know, and one of the stories I've heard repeatedly is people dissolving longstanding marriages, you know, 20, 30 year marriages, because, you know, one spouse decides that she doesn't want to be married anymore, and she finds a priest who says, oh, honey, you've got grounds for annulment. It'll be fine. And the kids are sitting there going, what? you weren't married all this time? The husband's like, what? What just happened here, you know? And so the church has succumbed to the times in that respect, I would say, you know, because honestly, if okay, you've been together 30 years, you had 7 children, it's not really a marriage. Hey, how about we convalidate this union? Let's make it so it's valid, okay? You're grown up now. Let's do it. Let's take care of it. But nobody ever thinks of that. No, it's divorce, divorce, divorce. You know, annulment, annulment, annulment. Move on to the next spouse. You know, come on, people. We got to do better than that.
And it ends up with children abandoned is what I mean.
Oh, my gosh.
Legally sanctioned abandoning of children.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they don't get over it.
No.
You know, and you were talking about Layla Miller. Layla's a good friend of mine, and her book, Primal Loss, I wrote the foreword to it. And that book is about the impact of divorce on children, and they are the number one victims whose stories never get told.
No, we can't talk about that. We cannot talk about the victims of the sexual revolution. Then we'll have to admit that it's not all good and clear. You got to be careful there, Dr. Morris. We'll be right back with more on the sexual revolution and the brand new book, The Sexual State, from Dr. Jennifer Robach Morse, right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Call us now with your question.
Hello?
On Catholic Answers Live.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old children or how to help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture decays, we have to know how to talk to our children about these issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. If we're not teaching our children how to confront tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging onto the shop at Catholic.com.
With the recent commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the release of Humani Vitae, there have been fresh attacks on Catholic teaching from outside and, unfortunately, inside the Church. That's why Catholic Answers thought it critical to provide a vigorous affirmation of Pope Paul VI's prophetic wisdom with our newest book, Inseparable, 5 Perspectives on Sex, Life, and Love in Defense of Humani Vitae. We asked 5 distinguished contributors to reflect on and defend Humani Vitae from 5 perspectives, each of them compelling, together forming a mosaic of truth. Don't be caught uninformed when the topic comes up among friends, family, and coworkers. Order your copy of Inseparable today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or by visiting the shop at Catholic.com.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic? Let's talk about it on Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Next hour, Mark Bromley is going to be here from Ignatius Press. They have a wonderful book out from Cardinal Francis Arinze about the evangelizing parish. We're going to talk about, what is the state of the parish? We talk about all these great big giant issues in the church, and the church happens for almost everyone at the very local level of the parish. So what's the state of the parish, and how can a parish become a fully evangelizing parish? That will be Mark Bromley next hour. This hour we're talking about, and I'm going to say it slowly because it's a mouthful maybe, and I want you to know what the book is and where to get it. The book is called The Sexual State: How Elite Ideologies Are Destroying Lives and Why the Church Was Right All Along. The author is Jennifer Robach Morse, PhD, and you can get the book by going either to ruthinstitute.org. Ruth Institute is the institute founded by Dr. Morse to defend marriage. Or you can go to the website of the book itself, thesexualstate.com. And I believe if you go to and buy it at thesexualstate.com this week, you're getting an autographed copy.
That's right.
All right.
But you got to buy it from us. Don't mess around with Amazon.
don't mess with Amazon. The Sexual State is the name of the book. TheSexualState.com is where you can get it. Tons of people on the phone for you, Dr. Morse. And I have a million questions, but I think it's best if I let them ask questions. So we proceed to Kenneth in Bismarck, North Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio. Kenneth, you are on with Dr. Jennifer Robach Morse.
Yes, I hope I'm not taking you off track, but it seems like the pill is the thing that opened the door to all this madness. And I'm wondering, is anyone in the church advocating for women who've been killed or crippled from the pill, like a class action lawsuit like we got going against the tobacco industry and asbestos, and now I guess they're going after Roundup.
I see, yeah. So are there suits against the companies who have produced these contraceptive chemicals and hormones in the way that yeah, that's a wonderful question. Like the tobacco companies they went after and pesticide companies. Has that happened on the contraceptive end of it at all?
Okay, so first off, Kenneth, this is a great question for a number of reasons, and no, you're not taking us off track one bit, because the contraceptive issue is really the heart of a lot of the problems that we have, because the contraceptive ideology is basically trying to say sex is an entitlement. Sex without a live baby, it's an entitlement. You can have as much sex as you want. Nothing bad's going to happen as long as you use a condom every time. You know, I mean, this type of mentality. And so that's at the root of a lot of the problems that we're having. So it's, I think, very important that we talk about it. And I'm sorry to say no one but the Catholic Church will talk about it. And we don't even have enough Catholics talking about it, as far as I'm concerned. To your specific question, I don't know of anybody who's planning a class action lawsuit on this topic. I posed it to a couple of attorneys one time, and they started talking to me about the burden of proof and things like that to really prove the connection between this and that and the third thing. And, you know, so they know their business. But what I have to tell you, Kenneth, is that in cases where women have been harmed by their contraception, there are a number of cases, and I talk about them in the book. In fact, there's a whole section in this book on the contraceptive ideology, including a whole chapter on propaganda. And one of the things that they do is, you know, of course, the harms of contraception are airbrushed out of the picture, right? You never hear about that. But if you keep your ear to the ground, you will hear about these women who died at the age of 22 from a stroke or from, a blood clot or, you know, those type of things. And their parents, there have been a number of cases where the parents go and try to sue the pharmaceutical companies, and what tends to happen is that the companies will pay off some little settlement, and the settlement will have a gag order attached to it. Okay, and so there was one case that I talk about in the book, and that I've talked about in numerous of my lectures on this topic. Erica Langhart was the young lady's name. She died. I think she was 22, something like that. She died, and her parents sued, and her parents said, you know what, we're not taking this settlement. This is like pocket change to these pharmaceutical companies. They just consider this the cost of doing business. Our daughter doesn't matter to them. Preventing further harm to other women, that doesn't matter to them. I'm not taking your money, and we're not going to be silent. Well, eventually, that mother ended up committing suicide. So it's really a tragic story all the way around. And, I feel like a lot of the pro-life people need to be moving into this direction to reach out to these women and their families to offer solace and help. And if there are any trial attorneys listening to me here, I realize it's a long shot and there's a lot of work that would have a lot of legwork would have to go into doing one of these lawsuits. But, you know, if we can essentially ban smoking, we ought to be able to do something about these risks because they're real and they're well documented.
Kenneth, thank you so much for that call. You didn't take us off track at all.
Not a bit. In fact, while you're getting the next caller on here, I'm gonna flip open the book here. Yes. It's chapter 6. It's called The Propaganda for the Contraceptive Ideology. And are you still there, honey? I can't see you guys anymore.
Oh, we're still here.
Okay, great.
And you're still with us.
Yes, yes. Propaganda for the Contraceptive Ideology. I think that's probably the longest chapter in the book. And part of the propaganda is to suppress genuine, authentic medical information about the harms that are associated both with contraception and with abortion. And the professions go into overdrive to you know, like circle the wagons around the idea that this is all totally safe and no risks, no harms and all of that. So I think that that's one of the parts of this book that I'm really the most proud of. And I hope pro-life people will, you know, will take full advantage of that.
Thanks again, Kenneth, for that call. Steve in Houston, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. You are up with Dr. Jennifer Robach Morse. Your question, Steve.
Hi. My question is, we've had the gay marriage ruling from the Supreme Court, and now we've had the transgender trend moved through society. What do you see as the next thing that's going to kind of turn our world upside down and kind of shock us? What's the next thing that's coming down the pike?
Well, each one of these three ideologies has its own end game. Okay, Steve. So the gender ideology, their end game, what they want is the complete elimination of anything to do with gender from law and from public policy and from social, you know, just society, right? So removing mother and father out of the law, removing husband and wife, those words were removed from legal codes across the country in the aftermath of creating genderless marriage, because that's what had to happen next, you know. So then they were poised for the whole transgender thing, but they're not going to be satisfied as long as there's anything in law or social practice that says men and women are different, or there's something special about a man or something special about a woman. So that's what those guys are up to. That's what the gender ideology is about. The divorce ideology, the end game for those people, and I hope y'all are sitting down and don't drive off the road, but the end game for those people is they want contract parenting. They want to eliminate the connection between biology and legally recognized parenthood. And they're already talking about that in the law journals. Okay, so two or three or four adults could get together and say, we want to have a baby together, and we're going to create a contract ahead of time, and we're going to parcel out the legal rights. You know, we'll use your sperm and your egg, and we'll gestate it over here in the surrogate mother. And these people over here are going to be the intended parents and so on and so forth. They want it all done by contract and to have the body be completely irrelevant. So that's where those guys are headed. That's where the divorce ideology is headed. And the contraceptive ideology, you know, guys, you might not want to believe this, but I think the end game for those people, population control. They love, love, love China. They won't admit it, but they love the state having so much power that you have to have a permit to have a baby, okay? I don't care whether the Chinese allow people to have one baby or two or 1.5. You know, I really don't care. It's the principle of the thing that the government should be issuing birth permits to ordinary people to have children. That's the end game of the contraceptive ideology. Fun and freedom have nothing to do with it. This is all about power, and you got to see that. That's the main thing you have to see about the sexual revolution. It's never really been about fun and freedom.
Wow, Steve, you opened that up for us. Any thoughts, Steve?
It's very interesting. I appreciate you all the time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
Poor guy. Probably shocked him.
You know, where I thought you might go with the contraceptive mentality is that there is a kind of anti-humanism out there now that's growing, a sense of, well, people aren't that good anyways. Nature's better off without us. And that maybe...
Oh, that's been, you know, that's been there for a while. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Those people are out there, you know, because they're the people. First, there was the ZPG people, zero population growth people. And then there's all, you know, we really need to reduce the population. And yeah, there is an anti-human element to the whole thing. No question about it.
We live in interesting times. But by the way, if you want to talk with Dr. Morse, we still got time to get you on the line. 888-318-7884 is our number here. If you'd like to be a parish partner for Catholic Answers, we've got materials like bumper stickers, window clings, bulletin inserts, info cards, all kinds of materials that you can give out at your parish with the permission of your pastor, working together with your pastor there to let people know about Catholic Answers Live, especially in those places maybe where, well, I don't know if especially is the word, but where we're no longer on the air. We'd love people to know we're still producing this program, sending it out on 360 different stations and on Sirius satellite and through the internet and all that. Just email us at calpartners@catholic.com. That's calpartners@catholic.com and become a parish partner today.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
Here's one thing that I would recommend, what I call gap time. So, for example, you're driving in the car. When you're at home, maybe doing dishes, what are you listening to on the plane? See, I use all those gap opportunities and fill those gaps with things that are going to strengthen and deepen my faith. So I listen to EWTN podcasts all the time because I also want to learn and grow and deepen in my faith.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Dr. Jennifer Robach-Morse is our guest. She is the founder and director of the Ruth Institute, which you should find out about, ruthinstitute.org, doing the Lord's work in assisting those who are victims of the sexual revolution. First of all, not forgetting the victims of the sexual revolution, and also promoting a healthy conception of the human person, especially in sexual matters having to do with marriage. Her brand new book is The Sexual State, How Elite Ideologies Are Destroying Lives and Why the Catholic Church Was Right All Along. You can get that at thesexualstate.com. We go now to Ben in Lubbock, Texas, listening on Our Lady of Victory Radio. Ben, your question for Dr. Morse.
Thank you. I guess my question is that, why are we talking about this in this moment in time when the horrors that clergy are committing, just horrific, horrific things, and how are we to justify our position as far as sexual morality is concerned when the darkness that is... I mean, just even today, the things that have been revealed as far as cover-ups and things like that. I mean, when our Protestant brothers and sisters say, hey, who are y'all to be talking about these things? With what authority do you still preach these things? What is going to be our response to that? And why aren't we talking about the causes of the scandals that are happening inside our church?
All right, Ben, let's let Dr. Morse take a stab at that.
Well, Ben, I'm glad you brought this up because I do talk about it all the time. In fact, if you look at the Ruth Institute Facebook page right now, we have up there a little petition that basically says to one of the victims, this poor kid, he was 11 years old when McCarrick started working on him, and McCarrick abused him for 20 years. And the tragedy of that guy, I mean, there are multiple tragedies, obviously, but one of the tragedies is that nobody believed him. Nobody believed him. He tried to tell his parents and no one would listen to him. So one of the things that we can do as ordinary people, no matter what the clergy do or don't do, no matter what the bishops choose to do or not, you know, doggone it, we need to be listening to the victims and we need to be listening to whistleblowers. If your church secretary says, you know, there's some kind of hanky-panky going on over here and I don't like it, but I'm afraid to say anything because I'm afraid I'll lose my job or whatever, you know, we need to be stepping into the breach and supporting those people who are either victims or whistleblowers. That has been a huge cultural failure in our community. And I think people are ready to deal with it. You know, I mean, I just think, honestly, Ben, I know it's sickening. It's awful. But I think this is our moment because this is when we are going to say that these things are wrong. They're wrong if Catholic priests do it. They're wrong if Harvey Weinstein does it. They're wrong if girls' gymnastics doctors do it, right? You remember that awful story, that Dr. Nasser who is assaulting the little girls while they're on the examining table? I mean, it's just awful, awful stuff. And but we're the only ones who will even dare to say it's wrong all the way down. It's not just that they didn't consent. Even if they consent, it's wrong. It's wrong, you know? And these guys going around acting like they're entitled, that's the thing that's got to go. Nobody's entitled. We got to stop all that stuff. So, I it's awful and it's shameful and it's embarrassing. But at the same time, Ben, my honest to goodness opinion is the mother of God is cleaning house. She is cleaning house and she's lifting up these rocks and all these creepy crawly things are coming out. And it's like, okay, we're going to deal with them. We're going to deal with them. And anybody who says we're not going to deal with it because of whatever thing they make up about why we're not going to deal with it, I'm against that person. Left, right, center, I don't care. I'm not going to listen to that. We need to deal with it. And that means dealing with the abuse itself and dealing with the underlying sexual culture that has made all of this possible. That gives people the sense that they can do whatever they feel like. That's what's got to go. So you know, please take heart and tell your Protestant friends, you know, yes, we're wrong. We're wrong in what we're doing, but we're correct in what we're teaching, and we need to teach it more and live it more. And we need y'all's help. We need y'all's help because, you know, I'm sure a lot of your Protestant friends know the Catholic Church goes down. They're going down with it. You know, is some little evangelical church going to be able to stand up to the gay lobby or something? You know, that's not going to happen. So it's very important that we get it right. And I think this is our moment. And I really want people to take heart. Go sign our little petition for poor little James and tell him, James, we believe you. We believe what happened to you. And we're sorry that it happened. It shouldn't have happened. You know, that's what we need to be saying.
Ben, thank you very, very much. It is an important and I have to say I agree with you that this idea that we're going to not look at these things has to just stop. There's no more looking
yep.
away. It's we've got to look under all those rocks and get it out. Lydia in West Virginia listening on the Catholic Answers app. Thanks for downloading the app on your phone, Lydia. Your question for Dr. Morse.
Hi. I just had a discussion with my niece this past summer about gay unions. And I wasn't quite sure how to argue this with her, but she said she thinks the government or the state should allow gay persons to have a legal same-sex union, but not allow them to call it marriage. Okay, so that's one thing. And then the other thing, just tonight, my 16-year-old son, he's asking, should the government be involved in prohibiting gay unions? Why should the government say it is right or wrong? Is it the government's place to say anything about it at all?
Well, first of all, to your niece's comment, I think it's important for you to point out to her that many states had something like what she's describing, same-sex unions. We had that in California for a number of years, right? But the key thing is that was never good enough for the real activists. And you have to ask yourself, why was that not good enough for the real activists? Because it was not for them. It really wasn't about healthcare and insurance benefits and things like that. That's not what it was really all about. It was about other things. And for the true activists, the true believers in the revolution, what they are really after is the deconstruction of marriage. That's really what they want. And you know, Lydia, the way you can see that is how few people have actually gotten married since we've introduced same-sex unions or same-sex marriages, right? I mean, that it's been legal since 2015. There's been no big rush of same-sex couples to get married. Instead, what the activists did is immediately turn to transgenderism. That's what they did. And so that shows you that what the activists really want was the deconstruction of marriage and also the deconstruction of gender itself taking away the one man, one woman requirement for marriage was a way of saying gender's unimportant and we're going to get rid of gender. And that's part of what they were trying to accomplish. So that's an important aspect of it that you can point out to your young people. The other thing is in this book, I don't talk about gay marriage a huge amount in this book, Lydia. But the way I talk about it is that after I've explained these three ideologies here in the sexual state and how it really requires the government to make the divorce ideology work and to make the gender ideology work. It really requires intervention by the state to do that. Only then do I talk about how the whole move to have gay marriage, how that fits into the whole thing. And to basically say, people have already given up on marriage as a lifelong union that is potentially fruitful, right? And that's about the rearing and cultivation of children. We already gave that up a long time ago. So why shouldn't we let two guys get married? You know, that's kind of been the logic of the thing. But the point is, we were wrong to do that. We were wrong to give up the vision of marriage as a lifelong union oriented towards children. You know, those things have already been a mistake. And to further institutionalize it the way gay marriage does, that can't lead to anything good. So that's the way I would argue it. And I have a number of things about that in the book.
Okay, Lydia.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Let's go to, I don't know if it's Wiley or Willie. It's the way it's written is Wiley in Porter, Texas, listening to EWTN on channel 130 Sirius XM satellite radio. Is it Wiley or Willie?
Wiley.
Okay, Wiley, your question for Dr. Morse.
I'm going to try really hard not to get angry because this whole subject, I've been doing a lot of homework on it for years now, ever since my daughter was born. I do not want her growing up not being able to tell somebody, hi, I'm a girl, without being ridiculed and called a bigot. I have seen it on, I have seen these transgender people, and I'm not going to try to not say names, but literally threaten members of different religious faiths, members of humanity, who flat out tell them, I'm sorry, God made you male and female. That's it. No matter what's in your head, no matter how you want to act, no matter how you want to dress, you are male and female. And my question is, and I'm trying to keep my calm. I'm telling you, I am so filled with just energy whenever I get into this subject. My question is, when are we really going to stand up? I've already told schools, I've told principals, if you try to teach this stuff to my kid, I will come down there.
All right, well, Dr. Morse address that. I'm sorry that we're very short on time. So, Wiley, we might not be able to have much back and forth.
Yes. You know what? Wiley, you should be mad. I think this is entirely appropriate for a father to be angry about this kind of stuff going on. We have at the Ruth Institute something we call the book clubs. And what we're trying to do is to create a way for people to get together and be organized. See, people on our side are not organized. The bad guys are very well organized and we're not. So, and I'm not very good at organizing people, but at least we're trying, okay? And so I would suggest that you go to our website and look at the book clubs and start getting together a group of people who meet regularly, who study the issues, and who are ready with facts and reasons and evidence to go in and pitch battle when it has to happen. And there are parents doing this across the country. I'm in touch with a number of them across the country, especially at the local level on these sexual education, transgender issues. People are starting to fight back. And I really, really encourage you to do that, Wiley. And since we're all Catholic and we're all worried about this whole sex scandal thing, I would suggest strongly people form rosary groups. Form a group to get together once a week, say the rosary at your house, and then start studying some books and get yourself organized and ready so that when the issues come up, when they come to your school and they say, we're going to have this program for preventing bullying or whatever they've made up, that you're ready to do something about it. Because, you know, one guy by himself is not going to be as strong as a group of you, especially if you're used to getting together and you're used to setting aside the time to do it. That's what we've got to do. We have got to get out of our comfort zones and get off of the sofa and out into the public square. So I applaud you, Wiley.
And when I just want to be, Wiley, I'll come right back to you, but the ruthinstitute.org is the website you're referring to, ruthinstitute.org.
That's right. That's right.
Wiley, got just a couple seconds. Any response to Dr. Morse?
Thank you so much for just visiting this topic today. I'm glad I listened to your all show. I'm not a practicing Catholic, but I am Catholic, and I want to let you all know that in my heart of hearts, I see a lot of these signs as being what they always preach to us as what's going to be what it's the long end game. So you were talking a little earlier about end game. It's the long end game. The more that we are confused about our gender, the more we're confused about if it's okay to kill a baby if it's in a womb, yeah. The more we're confused about what's good or bad, the more he's winning.
Wiley, thanks so much for the call. Form that group. Dr. Morse is right. I want to let the listener know the book, again, is called The Sexual State, How Elite Ideologies Are Destroying Lives and Why the Church Was Right All Along. Dr. Jennifer Robach Morse is the author. Dr. Morse, thanks for a really fine hour.
You're very welcome.
You can find out more about Dr. Morse at thesexualstate.com or ruthinstitute.org. Stay here. We're going to talk about what's going on at the parish level around the world with Mark Brumley right after this on Catholic Answers Live.